Welcome to the Bitter Comics Podcast, and this is your host, JT Compton again.
Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of Bitter Comics. I am JT Foreman, and I am here with my good friends, the Super Negro Champion, Compton. John Jones. And a new friend, Mr. Brian. I don't have a nickname for him. Cortez, how you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great tonight. How you doing?
Awesome. I'm doing great. Thanks for coming in to join us tonight. Unfortunately, Terry the Beast, Michaels, is a little under the weather. Something to do with some beastliness got a hold of him, and he's sick today. But
it's syphilis.
Yeah, it's a syphilis. It burns, but he should be back again next week. But for now, we begin once again with our opening segment. JT was a real prick last week, in which I apologize for the cruel, offensive, and probably racist things I said last episode. So, for my insensitivity, in episode 22, I would like to apologize to black people, seaweed, speaker stands, facial hair, and limp dicks. No comment at all, just...
Oh, why are you looking at me
when
you
say like, limp dick? Yeah, you were kind of shitty to all of those things last week. All right, let's move on. Well, if you'd like to know specifically what I am apologizing for, check out episode 22 and all of our episodes at bittercomics.podbean.com. And if you feel I owe any more apologies and to make any comments, send us an email to bittercomics@hotmail.com. And in the subject line, please put, I agree with Terry. That was disgusting. How's it going, guys?
Cool.
It's been
cool. I can't complain.
Oh, sure you can. Go ahead. Good start. You can get
I live in Fresno. On. It's hot.
It is.
Niggas can't get jobs. I'm tired.
Yeah. Everyone can't get jobs right now, I think. Brian, welcome to the party. How you doing,
Thank
sir?
You. I'm doing good.
Brian Cortez has just begun his comedy career just a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
I think the first time you performed was at the open mic at Reps. It was about 2 months ago.
Yeah, a couple months back. I had done it for... a nonprofit organization, you know, a few shows there, and decided to do it in the real world.
Cool.
That was the first night out, and apparently went okay, I guess, you know.
Well, the audience is laughing. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So what made you decide you wanted to start doing comedy? Everyone telling you how funny you are all the time, or is there?
Well, you know, I was the type that would always sit around the campfire telling jokes, drinking beer till, you know, 4 in the morning telling jokes, and everybody laughing. I thought, well, let's put this to work. Or a public venue, let's put it that way.
And how different would you say it is performing stand-up comedy than it is just telling stories to your friends while you're on the campfire drinking beer?
It's more compressed, the time frame, let's put it that way. You had to, you know, hopefully try to keep people laughing.
Yeah.
And versus drinking around the campfire, tell a joke every 15 minutes, people laughing, and they continue to laugh and have another beer, and let's tell another joke 15 minutes later. So it's, you know, it's more compressed.
So your buddies have more patience because there's a lot of free beer there.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas you're in a bar, people are paying $4 a drink.
Make me laugh.
Yeah.
You better make me laugh.
You got to keep their attention, otherwise they're just going to start talking amongst themselves.
Right.
Well, comment on what you're saying. Yeah, it is a lot different. I find it's a lot easier, you know, to just chop it up with homies, man. You know, I do really good in that sort of setting, you know, cracking people up. But, like, when the scariest word you hear is, you're up next.
Right.
You know, and then you've got to do it, and everybody's looking at you.
That initial icebreaker is the tough part, you know. Just once you get them laughed the first time, then you know you're in, and you're good. Then let's get rolling.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that so many comics, they start off with just one short joke that gets a really good laugh. You talked about your belt, John. And
I was afraid of John first time I saw him. I thought he was a wrestler or something. He was gonna kick my ass.
You know, everyone keeps
he's a big guy.
Everyone keeps saying that, but I had no fear whatsoever of John because he was wearing the belt.
See, this is because you thought I was a chocolate cake with eyes, nigga.
That is not the case. Actually, when I saw the belt, what I thought to myself was that you were you got a good sense of humor, and you have some idea of what kind of character you're trying to be on stage. So it's not like. You know, I don't know. I mean, if you've been wearing a gun or something, my reaction might have been a little bit different. But the belt, it's not exactly a joke, but it is a bit of levity as far as I can see. But I don't know. Everyone seems to tell me that, especially the first thing I ever said to you when we talked, everyone tells me that I was out of my mind for saying it.
Yeah.
And,
well, most people, what did he say?
Oh, I'm going to repeat it. Oh, excuse me, buddy. I don't mean to be racist, but do your people have to put spinning things on everything? He actually said that. And I'm like, do you know how close to being killed?
I said spinning rims. Because you've got the belt, and actually we talked about this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. But you got the WWE Championship belt, and it's got the spinner. The logo is on a spinner on the mm-hmm. front. That's, you said it was John Cena who first designed the belt that way. And of course, first thing that popped into my head, because I'm a racist white man, I guess, is the black people with spinning rims on their car, and now I see a spinning rim on your buckle, and.
Yeah,
I immediately made the connection, which, honestly, I think you made the connection before I did, and that's why you wear it. You want to get that
stereotype.
That's you want to get that reaction out of people.
No, that's
where cool. not that, oh, hey, black people putting spinning rims on everything. No, but to get them for people see that and they get the you're aware of the existence of the stereotype.
Well, no, that's not the real reason why I actually wear it. Really, it's a lot simpler than all that.
Well, you just thought it looked cool?
Well, actually, yeah, that's something I would do naturally anyway. But the reason why I do it on stage is, you know, initially I'm an extremely shy person. You know, really, in real life, I'm like chicken shit.
Is that your security blanket?
It's sort of like that. You know, okay. Like if I get overwhelmed, I can focus on something else than 100 eyes staring at me looking like ghosts. It's like some Scooby-Doo shit.
Well, you know, I tell you, when I first started doing comedy, I was living up in Seattle, and I have a leather jacket that I would always wear on stage. Even if the weather outside was not where one would be wearing a leather jacket, I still felt like I had to have that jacket on whenever I went up. It was like 6 or 7 months before I ever tried to perform without wearing it. And I just felt more comfortable when I was doing that.
Yeah. You know, I welcome stereotypes, honestly. You know, some people are offended by it, whatever. I'm not. You know, one of my favorite jokes, and I'm going to have to apologize to the Asians before I say it, but being Mexican myself, and I heard this joke years ago, and I thought it's, to this day, it's funny as hell. And the joke is, what do you get when you cross a Mexican and an Asian? You get a car thief that can't drive, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
And I like that joke. It's a stereotype on both sides, right? But I think it's funny as hell.
Well, starting out with comedy, especially, it's okay to go ahead and do that sort of thing. You need to have something, some base in which, before you can decide what character you're going to be. You know, like, I don't know if I've necessarily decided on what character I'm going to be yet, but, you know, while you're working your stuff out, it's good. Go ahead and talk about what's cracking. And that's what I do mostly, is talk about what's real, what's really going on in our cultures.
Right.
You know, in my comedy, most of the time, that's what saves my, that's my bread and butter, really. It saves me a lot of times, you know, so. Now, that's a good thing. It's okay then, but, you know, eventually you're going to have more in your gun.
Yeah. You know. Well, it was John Stewart in an interview I saw with him recently. He was talking about when he started doing comedy. And it's like the first, your first act is about yourself. You know, for him, he's like, I'm a Jewish kid from Long Island or something, so all of his jokes were about being a Jew in Long Island. And then he takes that 15 minutes and he goes out on the road working, telling jokes, you know, in Kentucky. And then so this next act is about, hey, you want to hear about Kentucky? So, and then after that, well, what's left? And you start turning your view toward the world around you more. But it's always going to, your comedian's act is pretty much always going to start off with just their own personal experiences. And, you know, that's, even now, a lot of my material is about that, growing up in Clovis and mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. I mean, where did you get the ideas for your stuff?
I mean, just a lot of stuff. You know, I know I didn't mention it last week, but a lot of stuff I talk about is just experience. You know, I used to work out in construction, and it gets hotter than hell, especially in Fresno. And I tell a joke about how, I mean, you know when it's hot, when you take a step and your balls stick to your leg, mm-hmm. you know it's hot. And an old fella there used to tell me, he says, we joke around about stuff like that. And I tell him, you know, he says, put talcum powder down there. And I remember going home, and it was honestly baby powder I put down there. And by the end of the day, it was just a doughy mess down there. Mm-hmm. So that didn't work out too good. But I turned that around, and I use it in my comedy. You know, I say that I put baking powder down there, and by the end of the day, I had cookie dough, and I made some cookies, and they were just salty. That's all that happened. But there's some reality behind, you know, I guess behind every joke, or the stories that you tell.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was in the Navy for 8 years. I got material about being in the Navy. John, you got jokes about your son and, you know, something that happened, so being a dad. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just where everything is going to just come out of what your life around you was like. And, of course, you got the jokes about the bit you do about being in jail. Mm-hmm. and all that horrible stuff you say about your wife. Hi, Amber. He actually doesn't talk about his wife in his act. I only did that because Amber's here. I would like to welcome Amber to our studio audience here. We're recording once again at the third floor studios at Denny's at Blackstone and Herndon here in Fresno, California. I want to thank them again for letting us use their conference room to record our show. And I hope they don't get in too much trouble for all the evil shit that I say.
You say some pretty foul, evil stuff, man.
Yeah, I do. So we actually performed last night in Delano at Magoo's Pizza.
I thought I was going to eat crap for real. I just came up there. Hi, guys. I am scared to death. God, please. See you Mexicans, man. I'm going to die.
It wasn't as bad as Trout's, though.
No. Yeah, actually, I got a lot of love. I didn't think I was going to be that funny.
Well, you know, that's one thing. Actually, I was talking to Terry about that on the way home last night.
Yeah, you sounded pretty bitter when I saw you guys passing you up twice in a row.
Well, my experience is that the further you get away from a populated area to do a show, generally the nicer the audience is. You know, it's like the friendliest place I ever performed was Miles City, Montana. And they knew that, I and the other comic, we're from Seattle. And that, you know, we drove 10 hours that day to get there. And they were very much aware of how far we had come to do the show for them. So, and plus, it's, I don't know, maybe they just don't want to get kicked out because they know there's nothing else to do in town. Mm-hmm. You know, cause you drive, but my experience is when you drive out in the middle of nowhere to do a show, they're really glad you're there.
Mm-hmm. They're really glad.
I mean, other than Delano, have there been any shows in the middle of nowhere that you, John, that you performed at? I mean, there was Oildale, but that's near. That's near Bakersfield.
I've been through there.
Yeah, Trouts. You know, Trouts.
Another time, I was scared to death. Yeah. It happened to be the same promoter, Eladio. I think he's secretly trying to get me killed.
Maybe so.
I think he's trying to get me killed.
Is Eladio trying to get me killed?
See what happens to John in this place. You know. You know, a bunch of white people who don't like Negroes.
That's entertainment.
Yeah, he wants to see how fast I can really run.
Well, you know, Trouts is, there was a movement in country music back in, what was it, the 40s or something, where it was called the Bakersfield Sound, and Trouts was one of the clubs where that sound was found, that kind of country music was founded at. So they have this real redneck tradition there.
Yeah, what's
up? So, you know, just, you know, They'll hang a black person just out of nostalgia. Yeah,
and they have such great songs as "It's a Little Wild and Little Strange" when you hang a darky out on the range.
No, man, they loved you, man.
Yeah, they did. They treated me very good. They're like, I'll tell you what, boy, big old tall white dude. He was tall. I mean, I was like, he was giving me a hug. I was in an armpit. He had a big old Thunder Road.
So is that about
you know?
Is that about how big your old your old buddy, Big Mike was?
No, Mike, way bigger.
Oh, Mike
way
was bigger. Okay.
He makes that cracker. Yeah, Mike is ridiculous. But, you know, he was
like, this dude's like 6'7".
I was like, I'm glad you enjoyed it, man, because you would have been the one to get a rope, you know, like, right there.
Turn the head upside down, fill it with water, let's go swimming. You know, he's just huge, huge old cowboy with it. I think his, you know, normal belt with the buckle was about the same size as your WWE championship belt. This guy was ginormous.
Yeah, and he thoroughly enjoyed the show. He's like, I could have, you could do that jail rape story for a half hour. I could sit and watch that for a half hour. I'm like, well, I didn't think male rape was that funny. I guess sodomy is the best cure for crime.
You know, if he can sit and watch jail rape for half an hour, that sounds kind of gay, to be honest with you.
That's what he said.
This is Brokeback Mountain, Bakersfield edition.
He thought it was hilarious.
Well, hey, I'm JT Foreman. We're the Bitter Comics. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. This is JT Foreman. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right, let's get into our serious section of the show. As you know, Terry is a big fan of lists. Terry is not here this week, but I still have the list that I brought to appease him. Since he's not here, we're going to go ahead and do this anyways. I found this list. It's great beer quotes. I found this list on a number of different websites, which means basically a bunch of websites are stealing the shit from each other. I could not figure out which on what site it originated. But you know what? It's a list of quotes from other people. So no matter who compiled the list first, he stole all this stuff from a bunch of other people. So I don't feel bad stealing it from him. But you can find this. One of the places is at crockjokes.com. All right, here's the first one. This is by Frank Sinatra. I feel sorry for people who don't drink. When they wake up in the morning, that's as good as they're going to feel all day. So, well, you know, if you have a hangover in the morning, you've got something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Basically, the hangover going away. All right, that makes sense. Next, by William Butler Yeats. The problem with some people is that when they aren't drunk, they're sober. it's British people, I guess. I got a couple from Ernest Hemingway. An intelligent man is sometimes forced to be drunk to spend time with his fools.
That one's good.
Yeah, there we go.
That one's good.
And time is never wasted when you're wasted all the time. Oh, crap. No, that was Catherine Zonadella.
That is very true. Yeah. She is.
Catherine Zundella, she's a freelance writer. She does work for the New York Times and other newspapers. I'm sorry. So time is never wasted when you're wasted all the time. That was from Catherine Zundella. Shit. Here's the other one from Ernest Hemingway. Always do sober what you said you'd do drunk. That will teach you to keep your mouth shut. Good advice. There's another writer's name is Ambrose Pierce. He wrote the definition of a non-drinker. A weak person who yields to the temptation of denying himself a pleasure.
A weak person that denies himself.
Now, why would someone want to do that? This next one is from Timothy Walsh. Drinking provides a beautiful excuse to pursue the one activity that truly gives me pleasure. Hooking up with fat, hairy girls.
Oh! So it's not just black people.
No, it's Timothy Walsh as well.
You know, they have buddies of mine, they say they go heifer hunting.
Heifer hunting?
That's what they call it, heifer hunting. You don't call it that?
I usually hear it referred to as chubby chasing. Chubby chasing? Actually, Julian Aguilar does a thing about that.
Julian Aguilar.
A woman drove me to drink, and I didn't even have the decency to thank her. That was an anonymous quote. You know, that actually reminds me of in Miles City, Montana, at the bar that the show I did was at. On their website, yes, they had a website. A bar in the middle of Montana had a website. It said, one man says, "My wife drives me to drink." And the other guy says, "Well, then why don't you leave her?" And then the first guy says, "Well, then how will I get to the bar?" Okay, next from W.C. Fields. What contemptible scoundrel has stolen the cork to my lunch?
He is one known for always being soft, huh?
From Henny Youngman. When I read about the evils of drinking, I gave up reading. Well, you know, if you don't like the rules, stop reading the rule book. That makes perfect sense to me. Someone named Michelle Maestro La Casa. Life is a waste of time. Time is a waste of life. So get wasted all the time and you'll have the time of your life. That was very poetic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tom Waits said, "I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy."
I would have to agree with that.
Stephen Wright said, 24 hours in a day, 24 beers in a case. Coincidence? Apparently not. Brian O'Rourke said, when we drink, we get drunk. When we get drunk, we fall asleep. When we fall asleep, we commit no sin. When we commit no sin, we go to heaven. So let's all get drunk and go to heaven.
There you go.
Well, you know, you got to do something to find salvation. And if alcohol is your path to the Lord, then that's praise the way Lord. You got to praise the Lord.
Wasn't it the Lord that was serving up alcohol? Go ahead.
I think so. Well, you know, it was Jesus who turned water into wine.
That's what I'm saying.
So,
and the old joke, that's how you know Jesus was a black man.
Yep.
Right?
I don't usually do this, but go ahead on, man.
Frank Zappa said, you can't be a real country unless you have a beer and an airline. It helps if you have some kind of a football team or some nuclear weapons, but at the very least, you need a beer. You're not a real country if you don't have a beer. Yeah, I have to remember that. Let's see. Winston Churchill said, always remember that I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me. And Benjamin Franklin said, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. You remember Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy? It was from Saturday Night Live. They used to have those quotes on there. Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
Right.
If you ever reach total enlightenment while drinking beer, I bet it makes beer shoot out of your nose.
Beer shoot out your nose.
Yes. Dave Barry said, without question, the greatest invention in the history of mankind is beer. Oh, I grant you that the wheel was also a fine invention, but the wheel does not go nearly as well with pizza.
There you go.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
that's more of a Kool-Aid thing.
Pizza's already in the shape of a wheel. So,
yeah. Gotta have something else.
Humphrey Bogart said, the problem with the world is that everyone is a few drinks behind. Behind what exactly? Why is American beer served cold? So you can tell it from urine. David Moulton said that. Not a fan of American beers, I guess. Kaiser Wilhelm said, give me a woman who loves beer and I will conquer the world. I'm not even sure what that means. But what do you expect from somebody who was a Kaiser? Okay, and then finally I've got two quotes here from Homer Simpson. The first one, I would kill everyone in this room for a drop of sweet beer. And finally, all right, brain, I don't like you and you don't like me, so let's just do this and I'll get back to killing you with beer. All right, and those are the great beer quotes. Fun. If you've got any, if you have any beer quotes out there, send them to us at bittercomics@hotmail.com, and I'll be sure to mention those on the next episode. Okay, and finally, next, let's get to our 559 text of the week. Okay, so this is from the website textfromlastnight.com. They have text messages that mostly are beer or that are mostly alcohol or drug induced. It just text messages people send in the middle of the night while they're hungover or wasted or high or whatever. And people who receive these messages realize how ridiculous they are and upload them to the website to share with everybody. Us being here in Fresno, these text messages, they list the area code, so decide I want to support my town. And I do a search under the 559 area code every week to find a new text message. The text message from the 559 text of the week for this week is, I want the one making out with the dumpster. Is that bad?
That's real bad.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions about this one that unfortunately were not answered. First of all, was this text from a man or a woman? Because I think that matters. Because we already know guys aren't real picky. If we see a girl who's so drunk or high that she's making out with a dumpster, that makes total sense. Yeah, you're gonna try to hit it. Absolutely.
Hey, you, I'm better than that dumpster, baby.
But if it's a girl who sent this text, and she's seeing a guy who's making out with a dumpster, you know what? She could do better with very little effort.
Right? She can move to the guy that's peeing in the dumpster.
Yeah. It's there's the one who's making out with the dumpster or the one who's peeing in the dumpster. Go with the one who's peeing in the dumpster.
Man. Yeah, I got to only imagine, I mean, what's meant by that, huh? Making out with the dumpster. Was she puking? Was she hugging hugging it?
Well, I just...
It is Fresno.
I picture a hole that's been rusted through the side of the dumpster because the thing is so old, and she's just over there sticking her tongue in there, making out with it.
It's not gonna.
I hope that's not it. I hope this. This is just talking about someone who is actually puking in the dumpster, and okay. They decide to refer to that as making out.
Well, that would make sense. And if it's a gal, I mean, she's puking. You always doggy style. And that's throw true. It the other way.
Well, there's no need to interrupt, you know. So just get up behind her.
You're going to be all right, baby.
It's okay. Everything's all right.
It's all right. Get it all out. Get it out your system.
You got your medicine right here.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, we're going to take a break real quick. This is JT Foreman. We're the Bitter Comics, and we will be right back. This is JT Foreman. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. Okay. Let's do the news. First of all, we've got a 60-year-old New York man says he lost his job as a lifeguard when he refused to wear skimpy swim trunks for the annual swim test.
I'll be ready.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was him. I don't think it was David Hasselhoff. But this New York State, a lifeguard, he's 61 years old, and he did not want to wear a Speedo to perform the annual swim test. He showed up with biker shorts on, which I don't know that that's much better. But
the Speedo ain't going to hold his sagging balls in.
That's the point I was going to make. I mean, his shit's hanging to his knee. Tie that in a knot or do something with it.
Throw it over your shoulder, tie it in a knot. Yeah, exactly.
It's a flotation device. Lie to people. It's floating.
Yeah, well, that's why he's still able to act as a lifeguard so effectively. Yeah, just grab onto my balls. I'll swim you back to shore. You can ski. ski behind me. Roy Lester told the New York Daily News that he was forced out of the job after 40 years in 2007 when he wanted to take the swim test in biking shorts instead of his tiny swim trunks. Quote, I wore a Speedo when I was in my 20s, but come on, there should be a law prohibiting anyone over the age of 50 from wearing a Speedo. I would push that down to about 35, actually.
Well, definitely. I would agree with him. Yeah. He's got a valid point.
Yeah, he definitely has a valid point. He filed a lawsuit against the State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation in 2009.
What's a 35-year-old wearing Speedos?
It depends on the 35-year-old, to be honest with you. You know,
35, you can still be in shape.
Yes, that's true, but you know,
60, there's no shape you can be in.
So maybe instead there should be a weight. Well, you're going to be in a shape. It's just not a shape that's appropriate for a Speedo.
I mean, we're all in shape if you think about it. It's just different shapes.
Some of us, the shape is oval. Some of us,
I picked a bowling pin.
The shape
pin.
Is pyramid. his lawsuit was actually dismissed, but reinstated by an appeals court last week. And he claims that the bathing suit requirement was aimed at getting rid of older lifeguards. State officials refused to comment, so it's going to be going to appeal.
Imagine going to court on that and, you know, having them state a case, you know, if you're old, you shouldn't have to wear this, and having the jury look at that, right?
Yeah.
And put that shit away. Come on.
Well, let me see. go ahead and put a Speedo on and come back in. It's like, well, you know, they want you to wear a suit when you go to court, but they didn't mean a swimsuit.
I'll be ready.
That's right. Maybe he can get David Hasselhoff to testify on his behalf.
If he's not on the floor with a burger.
Exactly. If he's not on the floor with a burger. Okay, next. A taxi in Xi'an, China was crushed by tons of instant noodles. The cab was completely destroyed, but driver Lin Hu escaped without injury. Apparently,
chopsticks and worked his way out.
Yeah, pretty much. No, a truck was leaving a noodle factory, and they had overloaded it. And as it was turning the corner, the load tipped over and crushed his cab. Fortunately, he was able to get out without any injury. But he says he's going to be suing the noodle company for a lifetime supply. I assume. Not sure what he thinks he's going to get out of it.
I'm going to be hungry again.
The car is completely destroyed and is a total write-off, but he was not hurt at all.
I would sue. I'm rich.
Let's see. Next, I think this is the first horse-drawn carriage story I've ever seen that did not involve Amish people. I know, I was shocked too, you know. But we've got John Mulvina of South Yorkshire, England, was drunk driving his horse-drawn carriage. That's right.
Oh, no.
He got pulled over for running a red light, and he tried to blame it on the horse. The
horse's fault.
Yes, he tried to blame the horse, saying that it's the horse's fault. It couldn't tell the light was red because the horse is colorblind.
That's a good excuse.
Well, I looked it up. Horses are not colorblind.
That so would horses be, that look would back be at dogs. You, nigger.
That would be dogs.
You're lying about me.
That's not cool at all. It's Mr. Ed going, Wilbur, how could you drop a dime on me like that, Wilbur?
Man.
Let's see. Next, we got in Pennsylvania, a judge has been cleared of judicial misconduct charges. Magisterial District Judge Isaac Stolzfus had apparently hollowed out acorns, stuffed condoms inside them, and gave them to two women outside the Capitol building.
Okay.
So the women complained. He was charged with judicial misconduct. Guess what city that Stolfus is the judge from? Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
I was trying to give of you guys course. A hookup.
I wonder if they would have complained if he wore the condom and stuffed it somewhere else.
You want to see what's underneath my robe? I'm Cockman.
He tends to give out stiff punishments in his court.
It's like the yeah. the old Confucius saying, girl who sits on a judge's lap gets honorable discharge.
That's horrible. Yeah, but you know he gave these acorns that had condoms. He took the time to hollow out acorns so that he could stuff condoms into them, and then gave them to some women. This is the weirdest pickup line I've ever heard of in my life. But
that showed he cared. He's being romantic.
Exactly. You know he believes in safe sex too. Yeah. You know, I want to give you my nuts, but yeah. We're going to use protection. You know, I think that's a good sign.
At least he's saying, I'm
going
to use a condom instead of sticking it in your butt, you know. Most people are like, look, I ain't trying to have no kids. You need to turn it over.
Exactly.
Turn your love around. Dun, 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 dun.
Stick it in where it's brown. All right. Next, we've got... all right. So let's say you're a teenager and you want to get drunk, right? Okay. But you're worried that your parents or teacher is going to smell the alcohol on your breath. Plus, you want to get wasted right away. You don't want to have to wait for the booze to go through your digestive system. So what do? Well, we've got this new thing in Germany where what they'll do is they'll take a tampon and they'll soak it in vodka and then simply use it as directed. Yes, that's right.
A drunk pussy.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the way to save marriages.
Yeah.
Hey, baby, you may not like me. Put this tampon on. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. You're cute.
No, yes. Johnny been talking. I want him tonight.
Yeah, that's right. They're soaking the tampons in vodka. Women are shoving them, or not women, but young girls and teenage girls are shoving them into their vagina, and guys are actually shoving them up their own butts. Because I guess the interior is very absorbent, so it absorbs the alcohol quickly, and they get drunk fast.
But that's half the fun is getting there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh! It's all right after a few seconds.
Well, this trend first arose among teens in the United States, and it is known as slimming. Yes, that's right. It was common enough that there's a term for it.
If one of my homies was like, hey, man, guess what? I'm slimming, nigga. I would punch him in the face as hard as I could muster the strength to do it.
Well, I am I'm proud that this was a trend started here in America that makes me feel very patriotic.
You know, I think
that's where Richard Gere is from. You know,
I think true. Homework for next week is you guys should go home and try that.
And
let me know how it goes.
I'm not that much of a drinker.
Yeah,
so,
me either. I'm trying to stay in shape.
Yeah, that's the problem is that I'm not much of a drinker. That's why I don't want to do it.
In the interest of science,
yeah, in the interest of science fiction.
I don't know. Get Terry to do it. He'll do anything.
He's already sick. I don't think he's going to want to do that, too.
Just Terry, bend over. I can cry something on you.
This is called slimming. And he's like, I'd like to lose some weight. No. No, that's horrible. Should be ashamed of ourselves for even thinking that. Yeah, we shouldn't. You know what? Terry will get a chance to get back at us next week.
Someone see him on the street. How's that new diet going? Heard you were slimming down.
Right? I don't know if you know, but Terry is very friendly when he's drunk. I feel good. You know, I don't know why. Come here, give me a hug, man. Give me a hug. I love you.
Is that what put him in such a good mood? It's not necessarily that he's drunk. It's just how he got drunk, and he's very happy now. Okay, let's see. What do we got next here? I have a question about this story. Why does it always have to include the phrase "in front of her mobile home"? Okay, here we go. Rachel Avila.
That's where shit happens.
Rachel Avila was standing with her daughter and friends at about 5:40 p.m. one Sunday, in front of their mobile home, when she found a 4-inch gun on the ground. Assuming it was a novelty cigarette lighter only designed to look like a Derringer pistol, she pulled the trigger. The first time pulling the trigger did nothing. The second time it shot her daughter in the arm. Banning California police chief said that he was thankful the gun didn't fall into the hands of children or cause greater injuries. Yeah, it's a good thing they found it or someone might have gotten hurt. So why do stories all like that always have to include the phrase "in front of her mobile home"?
Only dumb white people are brave enough to pick up a gun before knowing if it's real or not and pull the trigger.
Well, see, here's the thing: if I saw a gun lying on the ground like that, I would be thinking, "I wonder if it's linked to a murder. Maybe I shouldn't put my fingerprints on it."
I know. Why am I in jail? Why? You got your prints, nigga. Got you. It's you.
Killed Kennedy. Was Kennedy shot with a Derringer?
I just picked it random. So I want to be in here with this guy. Before you turn out the lights.
All right. This next story is a little complicated. Follow me here. John is married to Christine. She goes nuts one day and kills their daughters. She's found not guilty by reason of insanity, spends 4 years in a mental hospital, and then 10 years under psychiatric supervision, after which she's given a clean bill of health, declared sane, and let go. Meanwhile, John has remarried. He had 2 sons with his new wife, Trisha. Then they divorced. Each of them has partial custody. Fast forward to today. John has reconciled with Christine. They're remarried and are living in the same residence, and for some strange reason, Trisha doesn't want her 2 sons living in the same house as a woman who'd once flipped out and murdered her own children in their sleep. Go figure.
I think she's being unreasonable at this point.
I agree. That's right. What? I killed my own kids. Yours are going to be fine. It was my kids that I killed, and they were girls. You have 2 sons.
Yeah, I can't stand really, okay. Other girls in my house.
Trisha is attempting to get family court to change the custody arrangements, but for now, she was forced to drop her 2 sons off with her ex and the former serial mom a couple of weeks ago for his portion
that
of the
that should be an open and shut case.
Yeah. Yes, I can't wait for the movie version of this. We can get Kathleen Turner to star in this one just like she did the original serial mom. Do you ever see that movie, Serial Mom?
No, I never saw it.
It was awesome.
There was cornflakes?
No, it was not cornflakes. But Kathleen Turner played a mother, and she was she snapped and started killing everyone who did any kind of even minor offensive thing around her. her son worked at a video store, and the old lady who came in and to return movie, to rent movies all the time, but never rewound them. Serial mom goes over to her house, kills her, and then hits rewind on the VCR and says, "Now rewind." So, yeah, Kathleen Turner goes nuts and kills.
I have a bunch of people. A question a kid would ask.
Yeah,
how do you rewind a DVD? Right? Have you heard that kind of stuff? Kids tell me, "Hey, Dad, was basketball around when you were a kid?"
That one I haven't heard, but the DVD one, yeah. It's just when you rent it, don't get there late, otherwise you'll miss the previews. Yeah, no one ever laughs at that joke when I do it on stage. Next, we've got a Swedish man who tried to set up a nuclear reactor in his kitchen at home. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Richard Handel said that he'd just been curious and wanted to see if he'd be able to split an atom. Next time, split a banana, dude.
Yeah, what happened to just making meth, man?
I don't know.
It's too dangerous.
Meth is boring. I want a nuclear reaction in my kitchen. Can you imagine what kind of crazy drugs you could make if you could get a nuclear reactor going?
Man.
Yeah,
you still glow in the dark for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you think meth sells for a lot. Wait till you get a hold of some plutonium.
Man,
now that's a high right there.
Shoot, I'm trying to get that plutonium too, nigga.
Police were called to his home in Angelholm in southern Sweden after he got in touch with the Sweden's radiation authority to check to see if what he was doing was legal. It's like, hey, guys, are we breaking the law here when I'm, trying to build nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
What's that? The police will be right there? Okay, I'll wait for them.
Man. Well, we're over in other countries telling people they can't do that.
Yeah. Well, no, this was the Swedish authorities that he'd called.
Oh.
Mr. Handel said he would stick to reading books about physics from now on. He's 31 and unemployed. Great. We got an unemployed nuclear physicist with time on his hands. He said he bought the radioactive materials on the internet.
Oh my gosh, from America.
You really can't get anything on the internet. He'd been working on the experiment for around 6 months and posted regular updates on his blog. I went to his blog to look at it. I didn't understand a thing that it said on there. It was all kinds of crazy formulas on there. So either he was a real physicist or he's just insane because, crazy nuclear equations and insane scribblings kind of look the same to me.
Yeah.
Okay, next we've got... the Roseville office of the California DMV will be closed for repairs for the rest of the week after a driving school student crashed into the building and put a 5-foot hole in the wall.
Wonder if he passed.
Somehow I doubt it.
What if he was Asian?
Yeah.
Maybe he was slimming at the time, huh? That's his excuse.
when asked for comment, the teacher said, "Well, I didn't mean to give him a crash course." He didn't really say that. and that's the news for this week. We're going to take a break real quick. I'm JT Foreman. We're the Bitter Comics, and we will be right back. I am JT Foreman. We're the Bitter Comics, and we are back. Okay, one last news story before we finish up here. In Lake County, this is in Florida, there's a company called Global Tellink that provides the inmate phone system. Mm. They charge inmates $2.58 for local calls, $13.85 for long distance, and $23.68 for international calls. The system is set up to automatically deduct from the inmate's account, and if no one answers the phone, the money is refunded immediately to the account. But due to a recent glitch in their system, the computer was refunding double the normal amount when the phone wasn't answered. Inmate Larry Stone realized this was happening, made 78 phone calls to a Canadian number, hanging up after one ring each time, until he eventually got enough money to pay his own bail. A few hours later, after his release, he turned himself in, saying that he knew the police were looking for him. He's now facing additional charges for scheming with intent to defraud and grand theft. Mm. Okay. First of all, it's not his fault that they screwed up their computer program, and he was, frankly, doing what anyone should do.
Take advantage.
They made the rules on how the system works, and he was just following it. It's not his fault that they screwed up the system and made the rules wrong. And number two, The real crime here is that they're charging $2.58 for a local call, $13.85 for long distance, $23.68 for international calls. Just because someone is a criminal and is in jail doesn't mean it's okay to rob them. This is bullshit.
Oh, they do this all the time.
The global Tellink company should be burnt to the ground, and all of their employees, especially the CEO, should be put into this prison, making them share cells with people who've had to pay these prices for the phone calls.
That's why people, you know, end up walking away from the people in jail. I know. I've suffered it. So, like, it's ridiculous. A few calls and the phone bill's out of control.
Yeah.
So you don't get to talk to people. That's sort of the shit that makes you nuts.
Yeah.
Can't even talk to your home or nothing. They get to see you maybe an hour out of a whole week.
Well, you know, you got a normal telephone. A local call doesn't cost anything. And with my cell phone, long distance is free. And there's a lot of international that I can call that are free. I mean, during the right part of the time of the day, I can call Canada or Mexico. It doesn't cost me anything. I mean, I pay the $80 a month for the total phone service. But long distance, there's no additional charge. So I don't understand how they can get away with charging all this bullshit for these when it's a landline, you know, and it's not even a cell phone. But anyway, that's the news for the week. Damn, injustice being perpetrated on those who perpetrated injustice, I guess. Yeah. before we go, I want to talk about. Now, look, I know nobody really cares about my opinion, but this is my opinion anyways. Kim Kardashian just got married to NBA player Chris Humphries. Just on a side note here, when I was writing this, I wasn't sure if I should refer to him as an NBA player or a star. I'm not sure how good he is. I looked him up, and his salary last year was $3.2 million. So that the paycheck tells me he's a star, but he's also a white basketball player, so maybe it's just affirmative action. Mm-hmm. That wasn't racist at all, was it?
No.
Okay, good. You do all that. Okay, so anyway, congratulations to them. I hope they're very happy together. I really do. But I have to take issue with one thing. Kim Kardashian's first tweet as a married woman was the following. God is good. 4 exclamation marks. You know, if there is ever an argument for atheism, it's the idea that God might be in any way responsible for Kim Kardashian's life. You know what? Sorry, baby, but you got famous after putting out a sex tape with one of your former boyfriends. If you're looking for someone to thank for your happiness, I think you might want to turn your gaze in another direction. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think. But no one gives a shit what I think.
That woman's nuts. That wedding, she got paid to do that wedding. I mean, like...
Yeah, well, you know,
basically.
I talked about that a few weeks ago, actually.
You're supposed to pay for a wedding, not get paid to do it.
Oh, I was upset that the wedding... I'm still upset that the wedding wasn't naked. Seriously. I mean, she got famous doing a sex tape, so she got famous for being naked. Everything she do should have to be naked. She should have to do Keeping Up with the Kardashians naked. TV or
things,
you know, when they air her wedding, the wedding should have had to be naked. It should be a naked wedding.
But you have to look at the guy's shit too. I mean,
yeah, you know what? In a porn movie, you end up doing that anyway.
That little blurry spot there.
Right? You know, at least they could do is do a special on the wedding night. You know, it's something, but. She got famous for initially from doing porn, and you know what? If since then she'd had some sort of a great performance in some movie, like Courtney Love gets a lot of shit about, oh, she's only famous because she married Kurt Cobain. Okay, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. Maybe you don't like any of her music, but her performance in the People versus Larry Flint,
right,
was absolutely amazing. That was one of the best. Acting jobs I've ever seen. She was incredible in that film. I really bought the character more than I bought any other character, not just in that movie, but in most movies I've seen. So she was at least in that, she was good. So she has some talent. I haven't seen or even heard of anything Kim Kardashian has done that shows she has anything other than stunning good looks and a great body. I mean, she's gorgeous. I definitely give her that, but there's a lot of gorgeous people out there. So there's the sex tape, and then her father was one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers. And so she started off, you know, I mean, the whole idea in America is that you can start with nothing and rise and make something out of yourself. Well, you know, there's not much room to do that when the people who start off with a silver spoon in their mouth are jumping in. And they say, well, you know, that just gets you in the door. You know, you have to maintain your success or fame, you have to do that yourself. As if getting in the door isn't 90% of it.
Getting in the door is all of it.
That's one thing I don't understand, because, I mean, the fame really came from the dad being famous, and, you know, so that's good. But what did you do? I mean, you know.
Oh, she did a porn tape with, what was the guy's name? Let me find this real quick. It was a former boyfriend of hers. But here it is. He's a rapper named Ray J. Is he a rapper? Is he gangster rap? I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with him.
But he ain't done shit in a minute.
But you know, I still don't understand that. I mean, because people, you know, get it on all the time, and you know,
there's lots of sex tapes out there.
Yeah, I mean, some women are more talented than others, granted, but you know,
Montana Fishburne's sex tape hasn't seemed to have done a whole lot for her career.
Sure hasn't.
Yeah, I mean,
she looks like her father, and he's a hideous looking man. You seen that jawbone?
That's you know, I'm not sure what's bigger, his jawbone or his forehead.
I think the jawbone. That motherfucker looks like Lockjaw from Masters of the Universe and shit.
Now he's a great actor. I've liked all the stuff I've seen him in. I thought he was great in Apocalypse Now, and even what was that movie, Romeo Must Die? I even thought he was good in that. No, was that Lawrence Fishburne?
No, I don't think so.
Oh fuck! All right, I'm gonna cut that out. But anyway, Lawrence Fishburne is really great. Actually, what was the last thing I saw him in was a movie he did with Jeff Goldblum. He played an undercover cop in the L.A. drug scene. I can't remember the name of the film.
Deep Cover.
Yeah, Deep Cover. Yeah, he was.
Lawrence.
Yeah, he's
187 on the motherfucking cop.
Yeah, he's a really great actor. You know, and if she wanted to become famous, I don't understand why she didn't just say, hey, Dad, help me get some roles. I mean, maybe he wouldn't do it. I don't know. But it seems to me that
he tried to buy up all those porno, because he was so embarrassed, he tried to buy up all her shit.
Oh, really?
He's willing to spend millions of dollars.
Well, you know, who knows? Maybe she did. Maybe she did say, Dad, you know, help me get some roles. And he's like, you know, his, you've got no talent, honey.
No, I'm Lockjaw. No, he, man. He's no.
Well, anyway. You know what? Seriously, though, Mr. Humphreys and Mrs. Kardashian Humphreys, congratulations. I hope you're really happy together. But I don't think God had a whole lot to do with this shit.
No.
Anyway, Mr. Cortez, you got anything exciting going on this week?
Absolutely nothing. I'm just trying to stay out of the heat. Keep cool. I'm going to work on some little bit of my routine. I write music, you know, that type of thing.
Do you have any music out there? You got a website on the internet or anything?
Nothing like that.
It?
You know, it's you know, I play in a band, and I've written some songs, and I wrote one song in particular. I call it a magic song, because when I met the gal that I'm with now, I shouldn't say that, but I say it's a magic song because when I played that song for her, her panties just dropped off. It's magic.
Ooh,
have to play it for you one day.
I want to get a copy of that from you. If it works that good. John, you got anything exciting going on? Any shows you're doing?
I'm going to probably, you know, practice somewhat this week, you know, somewhere. Cool. I want to practice somewhere, but, you know, just preparing for, you know, getting ready to start working out in L.A. You know,
yeah.
That's
cool.
That's coming up pretty quick here, so I've got to tighten my stuff up and, you know,
all right.
That's it.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to be going to the next bar tonight. That show actually is in about 20 minutes. And Wednesday, I'll be performing at Thai Palms at Palm Knees here in Fresno. Thursday, I think that's about all I got going on this week. And, of course, I host the open mic every week at Cafe Venice at 2225 West Shaw Avenue. West Shaw Avenue in Fresno. And so if you're... anyone out there, if not doing anything Friday nights, free show. They got great coffee there. Check it out. Starts at
7:30.
And, yeah, comedy open mic. Everyone's welcome to come out. It is a coffee shop, not a bar. But the owner tells me that if someone wants to drink, all they have to do is go to the liquor store that's like three doors down, buy alcohol and then bring it into the coffee shop with you.
Bring some Kahlua.
So bring your own coffee. Yeah, bring your own booze if you want. If there are children in the audience and it's a clean show, if there are not children in the audience, then say whatever the fuck you want. But hope I see everybody out there. John Jones, thanks for coming out and joining me tonight.
Yeah.
Mr. Cortez, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, but not in a gay way, you know. Just having me out tonight.
In a very straight and friendly kind of stay on your side of the table way. I am JT Foreman, and we will talk to you next week. Peace.